the Dinosaurs, the Bare Bones Dinosaur Edutainment Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Marshall.
And hey, it's me, the other one, David. That's him, yeah.
That guy.
Michaela, we're going to say the word memes in this episode, and it's going to be terrible, because we're both old. I mean, I'm old. You're not old. I didn't call you old.
You're younger than me. You can't, by the transitive property, if you call yourself old, then you are calling me old. It's fine, we're old, let's just say it.
So memes, they're fun, right? You know, you go on the internet and you see things,
yep.
And they're funny, and you're like,
kids,
yeah.
Kids love the memes.
This is great, yeah.
Yep.
I was trying to find bad dinosaur memes for this episode, because I've like seen a few around. Anyway, it was hard because
yeah.
I was dumb. I went to the wrong place. I went to the like paleontology and dinosaur subreddits and started looking there, which is wrong, because the ones that get popular on those subreddits are the good paleo memes. They're like the and like accurate ones. They're very niche paleo memes. They're extremely specific. So like this one, which is, fellas, if your girl is really big, is vegetarian, is older than you, that's not your girl. That's a 72.1 million year old Campanian age Santungosaurus giganteus.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure exasperated. I love that. I think it's great.
I think for me, I like a punchier punchline. Like,
no, the unwieldiness of it is exactly what makes it like,
it's the joke,
good in paleo circles, right? And like,
yes,
comprehensibility of the meme and punchiness of it is a drawback in these cases.
And maybe that's fine, to each their own. I'm just saying that I think I get exasperated rather than ha ha ha, you know.
Well, no, it's a meta joke, right? Like, ideally, paleo memes are
the
referring
joke
to
within
a,
the joke.
Yeah, they're referring to a very specific fact about a poorly known animal. And anyone who actually knows that fact or that animal well has like a sensible chuckle. And then everyone else is laughing at the fact that people think this is like good content or funny in any way. And that's where like a lot of the slightly wider appeal can come in.
Yes. Yes.
They don't really crack the pop culture bubble though, as you've just proven. They don't have mass appeal.
I think, yeah. I'm the everyman. Great.
I think so.
I am, though.
Yeah.
That's my role here.
But there are occasionally dinosaur memes that do hit, like, Reddit's front page or get very popular on Twitter. And some of those actually are quite good, too. From @TheNateWolf on Twitter is a very good classic one. Do you think I reference dinosaurs too much when I write? I asked. She was silent, like the P in pterodactyl, but it said everything. And, like, that's, it's dinosaur related. It's actually funny. It's a nice short tweet. You can see why it's popular. Or from @CaucasianJames on Twitter. Dinosaurs literally got taken out on the same planet we walk on today, and people still think we're invincible. You're not better than a stegosaurus. And like, yeah, again, it's kind of relatable, it's funny, you have a good laugh, and you share it around. That's fine.
This is it.
There are some bad ones, though, that are sort of less good in a couple interesting ways. The bad ones for me tend to play on the like, ooh, isn't the past so mysterious? Wow, we really can never truly know anything sort of feeling.
It's the thing you, I mean, hate the most is probably dramatic, but you definitely don't like it.
I
think we'll put
it
there.
Yeah, exactly. So this is things like your extremely fluffy T-Rex, which is drawn to look like a large sparrow, which is adorable and I think is very fun. There's also, you see a penguin next to its skeleton, and you see how the penguin's neck in the skeleton is surprisingly long, which they are. And then you see that next to a sauropod, and it's like, what if really chonky sauropods, and you're like, isn't the past mysterious? We can't truly know anything. Or Spinosaurus is restored with its sail being turned into a bison-like hump. Or some sort of sauropodomorph is restored with long human-like hair on its head, because hair isn't preserved in fossils, so we would never know, right?
Right, right. The hair one, I really don't like. I really don't like it at all. I don't know. Something about it is just, it's so dumb. I don't know.
That hair one, actually, there's a kind of interesting story there, because there's a blog post from the guy who originally made that image. He made it knowing full well that it was nonsense and just like making a fun meme to share around with friends. That then got taken and reposted without his watermark on it, because people on the internet are
of course.
Worst.
The worst.
And then it's gone through like this really weird shipping Ship of Theseus type thing, where he initially had the picture of dinosaur with human-like hair and a caption talking about how hair isn't preserved in fossils, so we can never really know or disprove that this existed. That caption got edited out and then added as like a Twitter caption above the image, and then further reposters grabbed the Twitter post, and then people started substituting the image out, so now there's no part of the original image which is left. It's just like an unrelated picture of a dinosaur with edited on human hair, and then the same caption. Is it the same meme? Have they stolen it from Starkey Comics? Link in the description.
I mean, and this is the problem with putting anything on the internet, is then this is what happens, and I don't know what the answer is, if it's stealing or not anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tricky. Doesn't really matter, I would say. The meme that rankles me the most is the various takes on, like, here's the skull, here's how aliens would reconstruct the animal, and here's the real animal. And it's done with things like hippopotamus, which has a crazy looking skull, so like fair play there to some extent. Elephants, because they've got this big fleshy nose. Rabbits, because, you know, big ears, hard to capture those in like a reconstruction. And this sort of brings me to my next point, which is that asking questions is the foundation of good science. And asking questions like this, where you're like, oh, could we accurately reproduce something like an elephant or like a hippopotamus, or would it just be this crazy monster that we share around, and maybe Triceratops wasn't this wacky looking? On the flip side, though, dismissing the knowledge and experience of experts in the field is not the foundation of good science. And I think it's a surprisingly and worryingly blurry line sometimes, especially with some of the images that get shared around, because there's two like subtle variations. There's here's the skull, here's how aliens would reconstruct the skull, here's the real animal. There's also here's the skull, here's how scientists would reconstruct the animal, here's the real animal. And the second one has this weird undercurrent of like, don't trust the experts, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, and really it's just, it's false for a few reasons. The first being saying this is how scientists would reconstruct this, you can never check that, because you have to find somebody who was a scientist but had never seen an elephant.
Right.
And then you would somehow have to give them just enough information for them to reconstruct it, because, I mean, the dinosaur scientists who are reconstructing what the dinosaurs looked like based on these fossils aren't just looking at the fossil.
No.
You know, there are other things involved, and so they're not just looking at bones and saying, here's what happened, you know. So, and yes, I think it is, I don't want to use the words anti-science propaganda, but maybe I do.
Like, I'm not saying that Russian intelligence agencies are making these memes to sow discontent in the West, but there are various non-Western powers who do devote some of their time to making memes for the purposes of sowing discontent in the West. And like, is paleo memery their prime method for doing so? No, I'm not trying to suggest that this is like one of those instances. What I'm trying to say is it's important to be cognizant of what media we're consuming and what messages it's trying to instill in us, and like what feelings it's trying to make us accept a little bit more every time we see them.
And something like that is sort of balanced right on this knife edge of, if you go a little bit in one direction, it's clearly just a joke. And then if you go just a little bit in the other direction, now it's questioning the validity of all science.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And when you're, you know, kind of on the line like that, then someone's interpretation really comes down to that person, which is also potentially problematic.
I'll circle back on this and say that scientists don't always get it right. And like, there is some validity to these memes. There are a bunch of structures that like, we just have basically no chance of reconstructing unless we have extremely good fossils. I mean, Psittacosaurus, we know exactly what Psittacosaurus looked like in life. I think there's like a sub 1% chance that we've got details wrong on Psittacosaurus. First, something like a T-Rex, where we mostly have bones and very little skin impressions, and like, skin impressions are typically from Tyrannosaurs rather than Tyrannosaurus, so like relatives rather than the actual animal. That's where I'm like, okay, we've actually got a fair bit of room for debate here and like interpretation within reason.
Yeah, but this is it. I mean, we like, all of science is basically just, this is my best for lack of a better word, guess. Mm. And here's why I think that this is the best answer. And then, okay, if new information shows up, then we revise.
Yeah, and other people are free to read what your best guess is and say, I don't think that's good because of this reasons. And that's what science is, baby.
Yep, yep. That's how everything we have today was invented.
Pretty much.
By trying things, seeing if it worked, and then having someone come along and say, what about if we did this instead?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I would say dino memes are a lot of fun. I'm a big fan of them, especially Ankh memes, which is a very good subreddit when it's active, which is rather infrequently.
Rarely, yeah. It's nice when things like that have, like, a resurgence, though. Yeah, and, I mean, this is... I think it's sort of a pervasive problem that is not, again, directly related to dinosaurs, but just for people to be thinking critically about everything that they read or consume in any way is really what we need, I think, in the world.
Yeah, and...
So, yeah, I mean, more
of
that. If
you're wondering about the science, people have written very accessible blog articles, made podcasts in some cases, right? But a lot of the original research is there, and it's fairly readable, especially in an age where we have things like, is it Sci-Hub that's the very illegal and I wouldn't actually recommend way of getting every paper ever published?
Perhaps.
Who can say if Sci-Hub is something that you should Google if you're interested in finding every paper ever published for free?
I mean, no one's saying that the, like, journals are, you know, paragons.
Oh, the journals are awful. Yeah.
By any means. They're very awful. Yeah. So who's to say? Yeah. Yeah. Who is to say?
Dino memes. Michaela, you want to do some featured creatures?
I sure do. Featured creatures, the creatures that are featured.
What's up this week?
I have brought us Lufengosaurus.
Lufengosaurus hunii, a proto-longboy sauropodomorph from the early Jurassic of China, discovered by Bian Meinian and Yang Zhangjian in the late 1930s, this early sauropod relative was already pretty big, at 9 meters long and around 1.5 tons. The generic name refers to the Lufeng Formation where the fossils were found, which shares a name with nearby Lufeng County. The specific name honors Yang's mentor and tutor, Friedrich von Huene.
So this is a pretty early discovery, 1930s, quite a long time ago. I mean, nice to see that people were showing interest in other parts of the world in that time. Was the dinosaur doldrums, like, did that sort of happen everywhere, or was that more of an American thing?
Oh, that's hard for me to answer. I've got a very Western view of that. Yes. I mean, this guy would have been tutored by a German paleontologist, because paleontology wasn't really taking off in China at the time, as far as I know. Although things like the Mongolia expedition for Velociraptor and T-Rex, Velociraptor Protoceratops had already happened by this point. So I think we are in dinosaur doldrums. This is very colonial paleontology, though.
Yeah. All right. I was just curious. Yeah, so there have been some cool discoveries of Lufengosaurus. So there is a fossil found in 2015 that contained a preserved collagen protein that was over 100 million years older than any previously recorded fossil protein. So that's kind of cool to have an actually preserved protein. I mean, yeah, obviously that's a big deal because that was in 2015. It was making, I mean, headlines in the way that these things make headlines.
Yeah,
so
in a small
internet
way.
Headlines. Yeah, headlines in a particular community. There was also a very intact fossil found in 2021, like in May of this year.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe that was when the paper came out. But it's like 70% complete, which is quite exciting.
Very cool.
So a very, very good fossil.
Especially for early Jurassic, the record tends to be pretty spotty as you go further and further back. So we have like very good sort of Cretaceous fossils. Early Jurassic, when you get the early dinosaur radiation, is much harder to have that much information about.
Yes, yes. So you mentioned 9 meters long. They also originally found some that were more like closer to 6 meters long. And the 9 meter guy seems like it might be a different
species.
Yeah. Magnus instead. But yeah, it's funny because it's one of those things where it's like, pretty small for a sauropod, you know, this 9 meter long.
Well, it's a sauropodomorph.
Guy.
It's
a sauropodomorph.
This is the first time we've talked about one of the sauropodomorphs on the podcast as far as I know, which are like this offshoot. So not sauropod ancestors technically, although I think that's a useful way to think about them. It's like, what did the early sauropods look like? Kind of like this guy.
Like this.
So he's thick in the chest, like barrel chested, but the arms are fairly short and he's walking around on two legs, but he has this sort of like stretched out neck and stretched out tail to balance that out. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's fun because like you rarely see what were early sauropods like, and the fact that they're walking around on two legs always makes me kind of just interested. I always like it.
Because you're just thinking, you know, if you just like were to lean forward like a little bit more, you'd probably have a better time, buddy.
And they did. And that's exactly what happened. And then they took off. And sauropodomorphs died out because like they just couldn't process enough plant matter because they were walking around on two legs.
Wasting all that energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They had, they had sort of a deep, broad snout with some bony bumps behind their nostrils and on their cheeks. The cheek ones potentially were like attachment points, I think, for their cheeks. I don't know. It seems like they had pretty big cheeks and, you know, chewing up all that nice plant matter. They were very likely herbivores. I say very likely because I don't think anyone really thinks this anymore. But in the 80s, someone was suggesting that perhaps they were omnivores because they have relatively sharp claws and, you know, pretty sharp teeth. The teeth are sort of like serrated, so probably for chewing up plants. But, you know, when something has claws, people are like, oh, it could have been eating living things. It seems that wasn't really, no one really got on that train. So
a couple of interesting things there. One that, I mean, earliest dinosaurs probably would have been omnivorous. So this is late enough or derived enough that it is herbivorous is interesting. Also, cheeks is kind of interesting. As we know, sauropods later on were just like, chewing is for suckers. I'm going to swallow all of my food entirely whole. So they don't need cheeks. Having this fleshy cheek allows you to infer like, oh, they're chewing their food for a while, which means that they're doing more of the processing up front because they're not like just letting that sit in their gut for a while.
Which is also a mistake, it turns out.
Turns out, yeah.
You know? They had five digits, which is pretty cool. I feel like we don't see a lot of guys with five fingers. And they had a particularly large thumb claw. Again, sounds pretty neat, but probably for grabbing foliage and that kind of thing. Just clawing at those trees, trying to get as many leaves as possible. Yeah.
Iguanodon would later have a large thumb, right? Large thumb spike. So
that's true.
Seems like talk dumb, get the thumb was broadly applicable across the world in the Jurassic.
I've never heard that in my entire life.
You're missing out on some quality paleo memes.
Anymore. Wow. Goodness me. I guess I am. Yeah. But yeah, pretty cool guys. When I was looking and the picture was showing them as bipedal, I was like, are you sure? Are we sure? Yeah, we're sure. I mean, their forelimbs are pretty short, to be fair. So it would be quite difficult for them to be on all four, but...
Yeah, I don't know whether it was facultatively quadrupedal. So like facultatively, they're meaning that when it needed to, it could go onto four legs just to like have a rest.
I did read in one spot that you know, whoever was writing whatever it was I was reading, this research is not great, guys, suggested that the arms were strong enough that, yes, if they needed to, they could get down on them and kind of do that. So, potentially. But I don't know I think it's more of a length issue than a strength issue, maybe.
Right.
Anyways, in terms of popular culture, not too much.
Oh, how wrong you are, idiot.
Oh, I'm wrong. Whoa, okay. I don't know if these things count.
Right.
So, it is the first complete dinosaur skeleton mounted in China, which is exciting.
It is exciting.
Apparently, they're pretty excited about this dinosaur in general, it seems, because they issued a commemorative postage stamp in 1958 with Lufengosaurus on it, and this was the first dinosaur to be featured on a postage stamp in the world.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, let me send you a link,
you
and then you'll see how wrong you are.
How wrong? Oh, good. Do love being wrong. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I see. It's a Lufengosaurus. The dinosaur with the hair is a Lufengosaurus.
It is. It is indeed the Starkey comic that kicked it all off. Yeah. Since hair isn't preserved in fossils, we can't rule out the possibility that dinosaurs looked like this.
Hmm. I do like this one where it's pushing a stroller.
I like that the caption's been edited to always keep them guessing because it's just like it gets more and more surreal, and I enjoy it more as it gets more surreal. Yeah.
Yes.
But yes.
No, yes, as I scroll down, it is, I like that the hairstyle has changed, you know? Oh, goodness. Well, there you go. How wrong I was, I would say perhaps I've never been so wrong in my whole life.
I think so. So yeah, this is a remarkably popular image online, and what dinosaur it actually is like very poorly known. I've even seen this in like threads on Paleo Twitter being referred to as a Plateosaurus or other early sauropodomorphs, just because people, I mean, the Wikipedia image is no longer this one on the Lufengasaurus page, so it's really got nothing tying it back.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this tail is pretty short. I feel like Lufengasaurus has a longer tail than this, but what do I know? Not much, it turns out.
Do you have a voice for Lufengasaurus?
Well, I mean, now I have to do something with his hair, and I don't know what that means. But like, I mean, I think he's, this hair, I don't know. Everybody I knew in high school that had hair like that and was a guy was a stoner. Yep. So
or like I don't know washed up rocker energy for me.
Oh yeah. Comes up and he's like, hey guys, I just want to hang out. We can jam. Like no big deal. I'll bring my guitar. Like it's in my car.
It works so well for it's this like, totally animal cool. too. Cause it's like, guys, did you even think, like, what if dinosaurs, like, had hair, man? Wouldn't it be crazy?
Yes.
We wouldn't even know.
It'd be so wild. They could have looked just like us.
Yeah, exactly.
Poor Lufengasaurus. I don't think that it deserves this treatment, but, you know, I also don't know that for sure. This is what this has taught me. I don't know anything for sure.
Excellent.
All the wrong lessons.
Let's round out today's episode with a little Elasmotherium.
Elasmotherium sibiricum, a garbage mammal from the late Miocene and Pleistocene, about 2 million years ago through to possibly only a few thousand years ago, of central Eurasia. It's unknown who discovered the first fossils. Russo-German paleontologist Gotthelf Fischer von Waldheim described the animal in 1809 from some fossils gifted to him by Princess Ekaterina Dashkova. This was a rhino relative from the past and was suitably big and scary, about 4.5 meters long and about 3.5 to 4.5 tons in weight. Elasmos means laminated or possibly metal plate in ancient Greek, and therion comes from the Greek for beast in reference to the lamination of the tooth enamel of the first fossils. Wow. The specific name refers to the likely place of origin of the first fossils, Siberia.
So, this...
I hate this lamination thing a lot.
He was working with some teeth and like a fragment of a jaw. He didn't have a lot to go on.
It's hard. Although... See now, here I am cutting this guy slack, and if you told me that Cope did this, I would be like, Cope,
yeah, typical garbage.
yeah.
I don't know. I would cut this guy some slack as well. Michaela, Elasmotherium may be better known as the Siberian unicorn.
Oh, does it look like a unicorn?
No.
Okay.
And is it Siberian? Maybe. I mean, we don't really know where the fossils came from. So let me tell you a story. So we find Elasmotherium. We get like first some teeth and jaw. And then eventually we find a skull. And this skull has a big ol' like dome on the noggin. And people are like, okay. Domes? We know that this is a rhino relative. In rhinos, big dome, big horn. Let's give this thing a gigantic horn. Because, because mammals have horns made of alpha keratin rather than beta keratin or the other way around. We have the garbage keratin.
Right.
It doesn't preserve well.
Yeah.
So we found skull, but no horn. So we're like, okay, the base of this thing seems huge. Give it just gigantic ones. In addition to this, we weren't just guessing. We found some cave paintings that possibly show Elasmotherium. Or a relative, some sort of like woolly rhinoceros. I've seen the most convincing cave painting, I think, and I would say it leaves room for interpretation or doubt.
So there may maybe some confirmation bias is at play here.
Yeah. The cave painting has a big ol' horn on its nose, though. If that's its nose. Mm-hmm. If it's not backwards and if it's intentionally showing that. These are the Rufignac cave paintings, if you're curious to look them up. The reason that we're talking about Elasmotherium is because very recently, a paper was published by some Russians that basically said, did it have a horn? How certain are we that it actually had any horn at all? Because there are some reconstructions of this thing, like museum sculptures, that have like a 2-meter horn. It's absurdly large.
It does sound unlikely.
Yes.
And are they only recreating it with that horn from the perspective of this is the like ratio of horn size to this other part of the skull in rhinos?
Kinda. I think it is also based on the cave painting to some extent. I think the biggest one, like the truly ridiculous horn size on the museum sculpture, I think that's just taken from this cave painting, and basically nothing else. I think other reconstructions still give it a big old horn, and you'll typically see it being restored as a woolly rhinoceros, which we also don't have direct confirmation of, although given the climate and like the time period, and the fact that there are other rhinos that seem to have been woolly, seems possible, or at least plausible. Let's go for it. Did it have a horn at all? Recent paper says maybe no. Maybe very small horn. Maybe horns really vary rhino to rhino, which is true. Some rhinoceroses, modern rhinos, have really big horns, like shockingly large, where others have much more modestly sized, and it can vary males to females as well, right? Like the really big ones typically are sort of outliers, and I think it's rude to call them freaks. or mutants that might show up to like a Professor X style school, but they're weirdos. They're not normal.
I think isn't there a rhinoceros style mutant?
That's a Spider-Man villain, isn't it?
Oh, maybe.
I know there's definitely a rhino who's a Spider-Man villain, and it's just a guy in a rhino costume. I don't know much else there. Anyway, we're talking about Elasmotherium because sometimes the experts absolutely get it wrong and make inferences that maybe are not well supported. I'll also say that the recent Russian paper is by no means like ironclad. It doesn't mean that there was no horn.
Yeah.
It may mean that the skulls that we have show less evidence, direct evidence for a horn than we initially thought. It may not mean that at all. I think this is very new science, and it's always tricky to, you know, make real comments based on that. The fact that there were very large rhinoceri in like Central Asia and Central Eurasia and like out to Siberia, I think is super cool. I don't think it's possible to make that uncool, even if you shrink or take away the horn.
No, I think they still sound pretty spooky. And proving something is one thing. Disproving it is arguably much harder.
Yeah.
Well, depending on how you proved it or what evidence you used. And I mean, it's just the same thing we've been saying where it's good that someone is coming along and saying, but what if they didn't? So that then the discussion is opened up again. And maybe someone else says, well, here's some evidence that we have. And the other person is now convinced because the evidence is compelling enough.
So that's Elasmotherium. Cool rhino no matter what. Even if it is a garbage mammal, I think rhinos are some of the best mammals.
Yeah, rhinos, there are certain animals, mammals, that just, like, one part of my brain is like, of course rhinos are a thing. But I never really think about the fact that there's just some rhinos out there running around with this gigantic horn just on their face.
Yeah, it seems wild that they're
real. And that's how they live
their lives.
Same
thing for giraffes, right? There's the classic thing of, like, how are giraffes real but unicorns aren't? Like, what's more unbelievable?
Yeah.
A horse with a horn?
No.
Or giant-necked camel leopard?
So big. Why is the neck so big? I mean, I know it's probably to eat the tall leaves or whatever, but yeah. And I mean, having stood quite close to a giraffe, it still seems weird that a giraffe exists.
Yes, 100%. The Elasmotherium voice, pop culture. I mean,
oh boy.
I don't think there's wider pop culture for I'm sure there is some, but like it's very niche right now and has been getting a lot of attention on Twitter and stuff. I'm tempted to just go with the typical like big growly voice for this.
It's sort of, he's nasally. He's got the thing on his nose.
On his nose, yeah.
I think the dome may be speculated as being like some sort of resonating chamber, a la Paris or Olifus or something. I have no idea.
So he sort of sounds like this? He's like a big, echoey, nasal guy.
Exactly. Echo.
Hawk. It's that. That's your typical
life. So scary. Beer. He's this big, scary, woolly mammoth, and he's just, yeah.
Exactly.
Anyways.
That's about it for this episode. Coming up next time, the final Dinosaurs episode. We're going to be talking about dinosaur lungs and how they breathed, specifically the cool ones, because, spoiler alert, Ornithischians, I don't know, I gotta look into it more, whether we know much about how Ornithischians breathe, but they definitely didn't have, like, all the air sacs in their body like sauropods and theropods did, so we'll be talking about what it means to have unidirectional breathing, and doesn't air come into the mouth and go out the mouth? And the answer is yes, but it's still one direction. What? Anyway, we'll get into that.
Valves? Is it valve-based in some
way? Yeah, it basically is valve-based. Yeah, that's a very good way of thinking about it. And then, you basically do just breathe. Anyway, but next episode. Let's not spoil things.
Oh, sorry. Here I go.
No, that's fine. Reach out in all the normal places, Twitter, email, all in the show notes. And until next time,
Hasta vista.